Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Shrutva haristam ananarthinam aprameyas. Chakra yudha patagra raja bujha hirudha. Chakrena nakra varanam vinipatya tasman. Daste prakriya bhagavan kripayo jahara. Shuva. By hearing. Hari. The personality of Godhead. Tam. Him. Arana Arathinam. One who is in need of help. Aprameya. The unlimitedly powerful Lord. Chakra. Wheel. Ayudha. Equipped with his weapon. Patagaraja. The king of the birds. Garuda. Bhuja Adhirudha. Being seated on the wings of. Chakrena. By the wheel. Nakravadanam. The mouth of the crocodile. Vinipatya. Cutting in two. Tasmat. From the mouth of the crocodile. Haste. In the hands. Pragriya. Taking hold of the trunk. Bhagavan. The personality of Godhead. Kripaya. That will cause us mercy. Ujahara. Delivered him. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada ki. The personality of Godhead, after hearing the elephant's pleas, felt that the elephant needed his immediate help, for he was in great distress. Thus, at once the Lord appeared there on the wings of the king of birds, Garuda, fully equipped with his weapons, the wheel, chakra. With the wheel, he cut to pieces the mouth of the crocodile to save the elephant, and he delivered the elephant by lifting him by his trunk. Purport. The Lord resides in his Vaikuntha planet. No one can estimate how far away this planet is situated. It is said, however, that anyone trying to reach that planet by airships or by mine ships, traveling for millions of years, will find it still unknown. Modern scientists have invented airships, which are material, and the yogis make it still finer material attempt to travel by mine ships. The yogis can reach any distant place very quickly with the help of mine ships, but neither the airship nor the mine ship has access to the kingdom of God in the Vaikuntha Loka, situated far beyond the material sky. Since this is the situation, how was it possible for the prayers of the elephant to be heard from such an unlimitedly distant place? And how could the Lord at once appear on the spot? These things cannot be calculated by human imagination. All this was possible by the unlimited power of the Lord. And therefore the Lord is described here as aprameya, for not even the best human brain can estimate his powers and potencies by mathematical calculation. The Lord can hear from such a distant place. He can eat from there, and he can appear simultaneously in all places at a moment's notice. Such is the omnipotency of the Lord. Here we're hearing of the greatness of Krishna, that he can hear from anywhere, anything. In the Bhagavad Gita, it's stated, Vedaham samatityani vartamanani chardina bhavishyami chibhutani mantavedana kashchana. He says, I know everything that's happened in the past, everything that's going to happen in the future, and everything that is happening right now. But me, no one knows. So this is God. Sometimes people say, oh, I'm God. Like we heard yesterday, it's a very common thing. But this is simply because people do not know what it means to be God. They think that, oh, if I just say that I'm God, then I'm God. I think that I'm God, then I'm God. It's so foolish. If I think that I'm the president of the United States, I'm the president. If I say that I'm the president, I'm the president. It's like so ridiculous. No. What is the qualification of God? He's omniscient. He knows everything. We know a little bit, very little. Krishna, he knows everything. Just like there's a test that people can take for an IQ. Like there's one person in, I think in Korea, he's supposed to be the most intelligent person. He's got an IQ of something like 215 or something. But imagine Krishna's IQ. He's never made a mistake. So he's very, very intelligent. And he's so intelligent that he knows what is best for everyone. And therefore he comes and he teaches us, he gives us this Bhagavad Gita so that we could understand something, at least. We can't understand everything, but at least we could understand enough to realize that we're actually the soul within and we're the servants of Krishna. And material life is not the ultimate goal of life. Material sense gratification is not the goal of life. Right? Like Krishna says, apoyamanam achala pajishtam samudamapa pravasanti tadvat kamayam pravasanti sarve sasantim apnoti nakama kami. One who is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires which enter like rivers into the ocean, which is ever being filled, but which is always steady, alone achieves peace, and not he who strives to satisfy such desires. So many desires, so many material desires will enter into our mind, to our heart. We have to let them go. We have to learn the art of letting them go. They'll come, let them go. It's just a material desire that gives no satisfaction to the soul. And so many will come. Let them go. This example is very amazing. It gives the example of so many rivers going into the ocean. It's like there's, I think, the biggest river. Anybody know the biggest river in the world? Huh? The Amazon. That's the most water coming out. I think the longest might be the Nile in Africa. It's a big one. Huh? Yeah, most sacred is the Ganges and Jamuna, of course. But the Amazon, because it has all this rain coming from the Amazon forest, this water is coming down. Tons. I looked it up in the dictionary, and it's described that there's some parts of the Amazon that are so big that you can't see from one bank of the Amazon, you can't see the other. You can't see the other side. It's like so big. And it's said that that sometimes the waves of the Amazon River hit the waves of the ocean, and they make such a tumultuous sound, you could hear the crack of it like miles away. Tons of water is going into the ocean at every moment. You know, just can't imagine how much water is going in there. But still, the ocean does not rise above that line. If it did, Melbourne wouldn't be here. You got the ocean right there. So somehow, of course, the water is being evaporated by the sun. Then it comes down again into the Amazon and so many other places. So it remains steady. The ocean remains steady. So many desires will also enter into us. But we have to let them go. But there are desires that we want to keep. And those are the desires to serve Krishna. Cherish those desires. Hang on to those desires. Don't let them go. Those are good desires. There's bad desires, there's good desires. Just like one devotee told Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada, we in this temple, we have a strong desire to distribute your books. And Prabhupada said, very good. Don't let that desire go. So those desires we want, the desire to serve Krishna, to please Krishna, to serve the Vaishnavas, these desires we want to cultivate and hang on to. Don't let them go. But all these other desires, let them go. And Maya is so expert, she makes those desires look very attractive. She's so expert. They look so attractive. Fulfilling those desires looks so nice. It appears so nice. But it's Maya. Maya Sakaya. It's illusory. These are illusory desires, illusory pleasures. It looks nice, but actually, it's poison. These desires are poison, and they kill the desire to serve Krishna. So we don't want those. Pray to Krishna, to pray to Krishna, to be free of all these contaminated, all these material desires. Because these are the desires that keep us bound. These are the shackles that keep us bound to this world of birth and death. So if you want to get free of this prison of material life, we have to become free of these desires. And of course we can get free of desire. Sometimes you hear, quite often you'll hear people meditating, oh yeah, the goal is to be free of desire. And people teach this all over the world. Thousands of people teach this around the world. They're teaching meditation. Yeah, be free of desire. But that's also a desire. We can't be free of desire. It's not possible. But we can be free of material desire. This is unnatural, actually, to have material desire. But it's natural to have a pure desire to serve Krishna. That's natural. Visya vinivardante naraha rajadenam visavarjam risopyasa param disavardate. The embodied soul may be restricted from the sense objects, but this desire to enjoy, it continues. But speech, experiencing a higher taste, he gives up these desires, these material desires. So we have to pray to Krishna to get this higher taste. And then Krishna, he fulfills desires. Man proposes, God disposes. So if we want to have this desire to serve Krishna, then Krishna will give it. Yeah. He wants us to have these pure desires. He doesn't want us to continue on in this world trying to enjoy this illusory Maya Sukhaya, this illusory happiness. And it's possible. It's interesting purport here, Prabhupada explaining how Goloka Vrindavan, Vaikuntha, it's so very far away. But Krishna, he's able to come here in a moment upon hearing these prayers by Gajendra. He's heard them from a far distant place. And he's come from a far distant place. So this is Krishna. He can do anything. He's known as Satya Sankalpa. Satya Sankalpa means that whatever he wants, it just happens. This is God. Whatever we want, we have to work so hard to get it. And even then, it doesn't come out the way we want, quite often. So this is not Krishna. Whatever he wants, it just happens immediately. So, but still, I mean, Krishna also wants he wants us to be pure again. He wants us to go back to him. But he doesn't interfere with our free will. He comes to take us back to him. And he would like us to go back to him. But he doesn't interfere with the free will. Therefore, after Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, what did he say? Iti te jnanam akyatam guyag. What was that verse? Iti te jnanam akyatam guyag. Anyway. So, Krishna, he spoke again and he said, now I've explained to you knowledge even more confidential than what I've told before. Now, you deliberate on this fully, and then you do as you like. So he spoke the whole Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna to convince him to do as Krishna wanted him to do. And then he said, but still, you do as you like. Still, you have that free will. We can all do whatever we like. But then what did Arjuna say? Now, my illusion is gone. And my memory of you has awoken. Now I'm ready to act as you have instructed. That was the result of Krishna speaking the Bhagavad Gita. That he surrendered. And this is another a sign of Krishna's greatness, that he spoke. Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita 5,000 years ago. And to this day now it's studied all over the world. Translated to practically all the languages of the world. And big professors are trying to understand the deep meaning of the Bhagavad Gita. Of course they can't understand. Because Krishna says, Bhakti Amam Abhijanati Yavanyas Chasmitata. To those who one can understand me as I am only by devotional service. It's the only way to understand Krishna. You can be the most intelligent, have the highest IQ on the planet. But if you're not a devotee of Krishna, then you can't understand the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. So Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita just off the top of his head. 5,000 years ago. Now it's studied in all the languages of the world, all around the world. And it's not that Krishna, he had to study for a long time to, make a good presentation because, I'm God, it's got to be good, Right? No, just off the top of his head. Maybe an hour and a half. And devotees, they're reading Bhagavad Gita every day. There's a devotee in America, he reads a chapter a day. Chad, it's called the Chad program. Chapter a day. So he's been reading chapter a day, every day for about the past 40 years. And it's ever fresh. So this is another greatness of Krishna, that he can speak words that are ever fresh. This friend of mine in America, he also got me on the Chad program, so I also read a chapter a day, every day, the Bhagavad Gita. And it's so nice. Yeah, what a wonderful way to start the day. Yeah, of course, Prabhupada has us, by his purity, he convinced so many to chant 16 rounds a day, so that's another nice way to start the day, chanting 16 rounds. Then add on to that, reading a chapter a day of the Bhagavad Gita, your day is set. So many books, so much knowledge has been given to us by Krishna. So much wisdom is given to us by the acharyas. So this is the mercy of Krishna. So one devotee, he asked Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada, how can we get the mercy of Krishna? And Prabhupada said, you just have to accept it. The mercy is there. Krishna's always given it. We just have to accept it. Yeah. Krishna is so kind. Yeah, he's, in so many ways, he's helping us. He's coming and he's given us this knowledge. He sends his pure devotees. He gives us so many things. We're getting food and we're getting cover and we're getting air and water. And so many nice things we're getting. Teaches everything, how to be clean, how to be pure. Practically, we didn't know anything, isn't it? We didn't even know how to be clean. One devotee, he joined the temple and he had some toothache, so he went to the dentist. And the dentist looked at his teeth and he had so much tartar. She said she had never seen so much tartar in her life. Yeah. Tartar means if you don't brush your teeth, and all this plaque built, it's called tartar. And he said, well, yeah, I never brushed my teeth. Didn't even know to brush his teeth, you know. So she said, she took all this tartar off, and then she said, well, your teeth are going to feel like fence posts after I take this off, because all the tartar was taken off. So we didn't even know to brush our teeth or to clean properly. Many devotees, they would only take a bath maybe once a week or maybe, once every 2 weeks or something. Didn't even know how to clean. So Prabhupada came and taught us everything, how to associate with each other, how to be clean, how to become pure. Prabhupada was once in London. And, Prabhupada, the way he would clean his teeth is he would have these neem branches. But when he was in London, there's no neem trees. But they have these, what do they call it? There's another tree. Anybody remember what he had? Eucalyptus, yes. Good. So eucalyptus, Prabhupada would use. So he was on a morning walk in London there. And he was walking and he saw a eucalyptus tree. And he told the devotee, go up in that tree and get a eucalyptus branch. It's good for brushing my teeth. So the devotee climbed up in the tree and he's getting a twig. So one police officer there in London saw him. He said, hey, what are you doing up there in that tree? He said, oh, I'm getting a twig from my spiritual master. He said, you can't do that. Get down. Come on. He said, but this is what my spiritual master... He went down. He said, well, this is what my spiritual master used to clean his teeth. And you can't do that. Maybe... Well, I can't tell my spiritual master. He's my guru. You go, you tell him. So he went over to Prabhupada. And he said, your disciple here, he's up in the tree and he's getting these twigs, but he can't do that. This is the state park. You can't do that. And Prabhupada looked at him and said, you British, you went all over the world stealing countries and killing the residents. And you're saying that we can't have this twig from your tree? He said, all right, go ahead. So there's so much illusion. Isavashyam idam sarvam yakincha jagatyanjaya. Everything that exists is owned and controlled by the Supreme Lord. Therefore, we should only accept that which we need as our quota, not accept more, knowing to whom everything belongs. So actually, everything belongs to Krishna. We may think that this iPhone or this iPad or this desk or this bed belongs to me. Actually, nothing belongs to us. We're just borrowing things that we can use in the service of Krishna. And if we think that anything is ours, then we're an illusion. We're fallen, actually. Everything belongs to Krishna. And Krishna, He kindly comes and gives us things that we can use. And the best thing, best way to use things is to utilize things in the service of Krishna. And sometimes people would criticize Prabhupada that you are supposed to be an ascetic group, but you have these cars and you have these big buildings and all this. So how is this? It seems to be contradictory. And Prabhupada said, actually there's one here in Australia, one reporter that said, you know, he was presenting like this, you know, that you're supposed to be an ascetic group, you know, renounced. They're picking you up in a Rolls Royce. How is this? And Prabhupada said, actually my service is service to God. And God is the greatest. So I'm serving the greatest. So my service on this planet is very important. So this tin, this steel Rolls Royce is actually not sufficient. Actually it should be a golden Rolls Royce. Because I'm doing the highest service for society. And that kind of threw him off a little bit. You know? It's not efficient. You know? This is not appropriate. Because I'm doing the service that is most important on this planet. So this steel Rolls Royce, what's the big deal? Not so big. So the devotees heard that and they're like, Jai, Srila Prabhupada! So yes, Prabhupada utilized everything. Actually, it's interesting that recently in one magazine, there was an article about the 10 people that were most successful in the past 100 years after the age of 60. And Prabhupada was the number one on that list. Actually, he started not only after 60, after 70, he arrived in New York City at the age of 70. He had his 70th birthday in the ocean. So he was 70. He came to New York City with 40 rupees, which means nothing. And he started this worldwide multi-million dollar, it was a huge movement by the time he was 82 when he left. So Prabhupada, he had such success, incredible success, in just 11 years, amazing, multi-million dollar movement, thousands and thousands of followers, but he didn't use one penny, not a penny, for sense gratification. Everything was used in the service of Krishna. And this is why he was such a success, because he was so pure. He only wanted to please Krishna. He worked so hard. There was one instance in Mexico where he had been preaching all day long, preaching programs all day long. And all he had throughout the day was a puri and some milk. And then at the end of the day, the temple president said, Prabhupada, you know, sorry to mention this to you, but we're having a program tonight on the radio. It's going to be a late program. It's going to be at 12 o'clock. But it's the most popular radio program in the whole country. And it was, you know, Prabhupada, you'd usually, you know, retire early. The Prabhupada said, how many people were here? You know, he said, 20 million, Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, then we must go. So he was preaching all day long, and then at the end of the day, he was just so happy preaching Krishna consciousness. And the interviewer was so respectful to Prabhupada. He was just like, it was unbelievable how much reverence he had for Srila Prabhupada. People could see, they could feel the purity of Srila Prabhupada. And there was one, when Prabhupada was preaching in India, there was one man who heard Srila Prabhupada speak, and he was so impressed by his purity that after the lecture, he went up to Prabhupada and he paid dandavats to Prabhupada. And he said, Swamiji, you can save me. You can save me. You can save me, Prabhupada. And he said, no, I cannot save you. But I can put you in the direction by which you can be saved. But you have to do the work. You have to do the work. Don't think that I'm just going to save you. I can give you the right direction. But you have to do the work. Just like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he gave the example of a man in a well, and a rope is thrown down to the man to help him. He's in big distress, shouting for help. Someone help, please. Someone throws down a rope to pull him up. And he says, well, can you put my hands on the rope? No, you got to do something. You got to do something. So this is the mood, you know. We want everything done for us. No, we have to do something. We have to try very hard, actually. Just like in that pastime of Govardhan Leela, where Mother Yasoda was trying to bind Krishna. Or not Govardhan Leela, but in this Leela where Damodar, where she was trying to bind Krishna for doing some naughty stuff. So she was trying to bind him, but it was two fingers too short. She got so much rope. And still, she couldn't tie him up. Good luck trying to tie up God, right? So she couldn't do it. And finally, because Krishna saw her endeavoring so much, then he gave his mercy. All right, now you can tie me up. Because she was so sincerely trying to tie him up. All right, now you can tie me up. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he says, these two fingers represent the mercy of Krishna and, who knows, the endeavor of the devotees. So both have to be there. We have to get the mercy of Krishna. We have to accept the mercy of Krishna. And we have to endeavor very, very, very diligently. We have to try really hard. We have to show Krishna that we really want devotional service. We don't want anything else. We don't want any of these other desires, any of these other material desires. We just want this one desire to serve Krishna. When Krishna sees that, then he gives devotional service. And there's two reasons why Krishna doesn't give devotional service very easily. Anybody know? Two reasons. One is that when he gives devotional service, Krishna is controlled by that devotee whom he gives love for. He's controlled by him. He said in this, I'm conquered and overwhelmed by pure loving devotion. So he's controlled by the love of the devotee. So he's not going to be controlled by just anybody. Krishna's not stupid. He's not going to be controlled by just anybody. He's only going to be controlled by those persons who really love him. So therefore he doesn't give it easily, devotional service. And the other reason that devotional service is not given easily, because it's not to overcome the modes of material nature. Very difficult. So in order to achieve this pure devotional service, we have to be free of the modes of nature. And what does Krishna say? Daivihe suguna mai mama maya andratya mama viyeva potente maya mitam charate. This divine energy of mine, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is very difficult to overcome. But one who surrenders unto me can overcome these modes of nature. So these are the two reasons. So when I joined this movement, I didn't know that I was entering into such a challenge. But there's no greater challenge that any of us can face than to give up these modes of material nature and attain loving service to Krishna. There's no greater challenge. There's a saying, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. Yes. So it's a great challenge, but it's a glorious challenge. And Krishna says that even if you don't reach the highest goal, still, whatever level you've reached, neha bhikkhama nasvasti pratyavaya nivijate svapna pesha dharmasya trayate mahatobhya. Whatever level you reach in this life, in your next life, you start from that level. So we don't lose. We don't lose anything. But we should really give it all we've got to attain this highest perfection of devotional service. And then we can go to this place. In a moment, we can go back to the spiritual world. It's like it said, it's so far. The spiritual world is so far away. But if we're attached to Krishna, then we'll go. But Prabhupada says that we don't go immediately to the spiritual world. We go to some place where Krishna's performing his leelas, some planet. And there we're apprentices. We get trained up on how to live in the spiritual world. Just like many of the devotees, when Krishna came here, some of them had perfected their devotional service and they joined Krishna in his leela, and then they went back home. So this is our future, that if we can somehow perfect devotional service in this life, we'll go to Krishna's leela somewhere in this universe or some other universe and be trained up on how to live in Goloka Vrindavan. And then we'll go back home in a moment. Okay, thank you very much. Any question or comment? Yes. Yeah, we have to always be careful about what we desire. Things in Krishna's Thank you. Someone else had a question? Any other? Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki.